What's new since Heroes?
Oh, a couple of hundred shows and another album, I guess. Mm-hmm. this time I think we're expanding a bit on a musical level and on a lyrical level, I guess. The Last Stand is not only staying in modern times and modern warfare. Heroes is only World War II. No, it's not really only, a lot of stuff happened there, but here we're going almost 2,500 years in history. We're starting in Sparta, 480 BC, and the last battle represented on the album is the battle for Hill 32-34 in 1988 in the Soviet-Afghan War. So we're also in that time moving in time quite a bit. Also geographically, we're in Japan, we're in Africa, you know, so we're spreading out a bit there. And musically, I think it's pretty much still a Sabaton album, I would say, yes. But there are a few new touches. Blood of Bannockburn, not only the bagpipes, but the whole song is in major instead of minor. We have a Hammond organ. The song Sparta is a bit longer and darker and harder than you would expect from a Sabaton song. And it's strange that we have the longest song on the album as an opener. I think also, you know, there's a few surprises there. For example, the single, The Lost Battalion, has no drums. No drums at all. It's sounds of war. What you think, everyone thinks a kick drum, it's a 50 caliber machine gun. The snare drum is a 9mm pistol. And it's a bayonet used as a hi-hat.
And the keyboards are also given the little rhythmic elements.
Yeah, exactly. So that song, we built a whole, you know, I don't know what you can call it, a war machine, you know.
Okay. It's your drummer that must be very delighted for one song.
Yeah, well, he actually liked it. We played it live, and we have he hits on the snare drum, but there's a trigger sending a signal to send that sound out as well. It sounds very easy, and he can play it for sure, but he underestimated it a bit. Yeah, no problem. Then we come to the rehearsal room, and wait. Oh, you bastard, and he gave me the evil eyes. But, I mean, it took him 45 minutes sitting down, and then it's good, you know.
All right. A little word about your last show in France, the Download Festival, about a week ago. So what's your memory after a week after that? As you mentioned, you decided to play one new song, which is the first single of the album, The Lost Battalion. Was it important for you to kind of introduce a new record, or could you play more or less of the new album? How do you find the balance?
On festivals, we usually try and go for a kind of a good party set, greatest party hits, if you will, you know, or greatest party tracks. It's a good opportunity to expose ourselves to new people who maybe haven't heard Sabaton before. And if we go, for example, to Download, for example, that was a fantastic show. I mean, we thought it would be shitty when it started raining, but the crowd was so fucking fantastic, I couldn't believe it. It's standing out in that rain, so we decided we're going out in the rain as well. I destroyed two microphones. To destroy this vocal microphone, one pedal board for the guitars went bad, but no, it was too much fun. People are standing in the rain having fun, so should we, you know. That's, you know, pretty much a short taste of the album we gave there. We only had 60 minutes, and then you play the party tracks, pretty much, because it's a festival, feel good, you know. And then when you go as a headliner, you throw in some unexpected stuff usually. I think it's nice, and a lot of people have seen a couple of Sabaton shows. I mean, and we don't know if the fans have been with us for a long time and listened to Sabaton for 10-15 years, if they just discovered us on Heroes. So we usually focus. We try and on every tour play pretty close to half of the new album, but also throw in one or two songs that we never played live or haven't played in 10 years. And then we have the special shows, when maybe our own festival or our own cruise, where we know most people here have seen so many Sabaton shows. Then we play the really odd stuff that maybe wasn't really released on an album, even, you know.
Okay, did it already happen in the past that, for example, you were the period where you were writing the album, or just kind of recording it, and so you could, you had a live show organized, and you could test some of the songs live before even decide to record or not. Oh. Did it happen in the past?
It hasn't happened since back in the days. I mean, obviously, before we really had a record label and did albums, yes, for sure. The latest time I think we did something like that must be 2006. We played the song Nuclear Attack from Athero Dominatus even before we actually went into the studio to record the album.
Is it just a question of timing, or you don't need that anymore, or you don't have the opportunity anymore? Because it's really clear, different period. You write, you record, then you go on tour, then you rest, and then so you don't have much.
No, it's not that. I mean, we could have the opportunity. I mean, we could play any song probably from The Last Stand on the next show, but that would be stupid because we noticed that the crowd, if we play a song that we never played before, and especially if they never played it, it's okay if they've heard it. But if they've never heard it before, trust me.
They won't like it?
No, some people will just stop having a good time and stand there and listen, and 60% of the crowd will do like this.
Okay, so to
yeah, upload, they want to be the first one to put it on YouTube. I don't like to play for, you know, mobile phones.
How sad is that? I mean, that's now live artists are trying to ask the crowd or the audience, please enjoy the show, don't stop recording sounds or
video. If people are recording and, you know, oh, this is a magic moment, what an atmosphere, and they do that, absolutely, I don't mind. Actually, if people want to live, you know, save a memory of that magic moment, but I think it's kind of sad. If they want to, they're allowed to, you know, record the whole show with their phone, be my guest, download, upload it to the internet, be my guest, but
it would be pretty crap.
I don't want to really encourage it, and I know that's what happens. If we even say, I did it for fun a couple of times.
So that's you new song, never played before. You will see hundreds of people.
We tried that actually on a couple of tours ago. So, okay, so you know, my friends, let's have fun together. Let's do some crazy shit. And you see people are like, we're gonna play you something we never played before. We're gonna play you something from the new album that hasn't even been recorded. You will be the first in the world to hear that. And then, put the phones down, motherfuckers, you know.
I mean, just to mention, for the tour, especially if I download, they were, Rammstein was playing, and they started the show with a brand new song from the new stuff. I couldn't be a download, but I could
hear the
song. That's
a cool thing to do, yeah.
I could hear the song online. So, I mean, I'm the first one to say it's a really bad idea, but I'm the first one to try to see the video on YouTube, so.
Oh, yeah. I mean, from that typical shock effect. Absolutely, it's a really cool thing, but then it has to be very rehearsed, and if you go on, you have to do production rehearsals. I mean, we could do that for the next tour and play a song, because then we had real production rehearsals where you can try out this song on a stage, because the musical part is never a problem. You can do that in the rehearsal room, but I can notice instantly on ourselves, on other artists, when they're playing songs they haven't played on a stage many times, because they don't know what to do with every move, you know. Mm-hmm. With Rammstein, it's pretty much choreographed already.
Yeah.
They had several, you know, times of rehearsal. We haven't had time to do that yet, but I think Rainbow did that on the Rising tour. They played the song, they opened with Long Live Rock and Roll that nobody ever heard.
Well, in fact, just how different are your demos when you enter studio from the final version? Is that really different?
Not musically, but Peter is a much, much better sound engineer than I am.
Okay, so the sound, you will make it sound powerful, and then, mm-hmm. But I mean, what do you say? Music-wise, or lyrics-wise, or the way you sing?
No. Of course, I have an idea that the beat is going to be and Hannes sticks to that, but he will make totally new drum fills for sure, you know. I've written the outlines of the song, I've written the guitar riffs and the bass lines and everything, and if somebody has a better idea, it's fucking welcome, I love that. But in most of the cases, musically, we end up with 90 to 95% similarity to the to the demo, but not with the lyrics, because my demos are random words that sound cool.
So you write in a studio?
Yeah, a small production studio. I have a studio desk, laptop, Gibson Les Paul, MIDI keyboard. So I play everything except the drums that I program, because I'm not very good in drums, you know.
Okay.
The rest I've been playing for quite a few years, so it's a nice way to work, because we can work fast in the studio. Everybody knows what they're gonna do, and then we can work fast with the basics: drums, bass, rhythm guitars, rhythm keys. Done. It can be done in less than 2 weeks, you know. And then it's where the fun is. Powerful stuff, because I rarely or almost never write guitar solos, and that's when we want to give our guitar players a bit more time to work on them, and we always have them record both, so both guitar players play on the same song, and then we sit down, everybody in the band, and choose which one is best for the song.
Okay.
So we do the basics very quickly in the studio, and then when it comes to finalize the lyrics, do the guitar solos, maybe some extra orchestral stuff, bagpipes in this case, then we take our time.
And on average, how many takes do you take to record your
vocals?
Yeah.
Oh, different than every song, man. Some of them can be done in, I don't remember the takes, but even with dubs, I can sometimes be done within 40 minutes, you know? Because maybe the words were right, and it was in a good key that it fitted my voice perfectly, so I singing it, you know. Everything has been sung two or three times, maybe. So we have dubs, so we can send together, we can pan one left, one right, one in the center. Maybe on that song we want to, you know, do something totally different, use effects on one of the takes. So it can be really quick. It can be 3 hours, you know.
Do you have a souvenir where it was take one? Or you need to kind of warm up?
I usually warm up, but I still to this day, I'm not good enough singer to have a one take for a whole album. I mean, I have had places where I've started with I wrote the lyrics yesterday. I don't remember the lyrics. I had to read them, you know.
Yeah, sure.
So that makes a huge difference, and I'm not the best at hitting the notes. I mean, I'm pretty much in the ballpark most of the time, but not good enough for Peter's standards, and he's, you know, punching me. But that's good. Thanks to him, I become a little bit of a better singer every time, you know, because he's always pushing me a bit harder. But it has happened that I made, you know, half a song and like, dude, that's perfect. We're not gonna change anything because I sang the wrong word in the middle, and then we keep on going. Most one takes, I guess, in the band, that's Hannes on the drums and Chris on the guitars. They're fucking ninja musicians.
All right. And so, do you have a you kind of a special relationships with Peter, because he's a great guitar player, songwriter, but singer also. So even if you don't really, of course, play in the same division or in terms of the way you sing, he can face the same issues you face when you're in front of the microphone.
Yeah, and also we both, you know, I mean, obviously he's much better than me at mixing, but I understand what he means when. And we can talk, dude, maybe there's too much 600 kilohertz in that synthesizer and we need to remove that. Maybe that'll clear the sound up a bit. We speak the same language that way, even though he's, you know, out totally in a different league than me. Vocals, yeah, we both understand that there's a certain gap there. If you go higher, that's okay. If you go lower, that's okay. But those notes, and you shouldn't really sing a high-pitched note while making the sound ee, because then it, so go, if you go da, then you can get higher actually. And he understands so much of the process. He's a drummer originally. He's played guitars, you know. He can play the bass, of course. He plays so much himself. So not only for me that we speak the same language, but also he speaks the same language as every musician in the band.
Yeah, so he could have a equal, like a discussion among equal with each band member.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, obviously, Chris plays more technical and faster than Peter does, but Peter is a good guitar player, so that means he knows enough that when they're discussing, you know, should we do this or that, they're speaking the same language. So in that sense, it's quite of a good good cooperation. The only thing that makes it a little bit outside, I'm pretty much the only one who's really into keyboards and orchestration and stuff. So at that point, I'm pretty much alone.
Right.
Peter will let me know, though, if it sounds like shit. And I'm like, well, what's wrong with it? I don't know. I have no fucking idea, but it sounds like shit. Do it again. Oh, no.
You seem to keep the pace of releasing an album each 2 years.
Yeah.
Is that your natural rhythm?
I think so. I mean, sometimes I feel it's not enough time between them, and sometimes I feel it's too much time, and it can be the same situation, you know.
Because you mentioned when we started this this interview, so you introduced some new stuff within the music, but how do you make sure, or is that an issue for you to renew yourself? Because obviously when you hear the new album, it's obvious Sabaton.
Yep.
But do you think there's a limit where obvious Sabaton become boring, found not boring, but see the same again and again?
Yeah,
predictable. So you know, it's so I don't say that about Sabaton. You have some bands, you hear some songs you like, but you have no clue whatsoever on which of the four last albums it could be, because each album don't have a very strong character by itself.
Okay.
Don't you kind of fear that one way or the other? What do you think about that, or you don't care? You're right.
No, I mean, actually, our only focus is bigger and better. I couldn't care about faster, harder, more money, more fame, or anything of that. Because if we only focus on becoming better and bigger, everything else will come with it. If we try and make every song we write sound bigger and better, if every show we try to make, we try to be bigger, or we make the show bigger and we try to be better, then it doesn't really matter. I mean, I've never thought in my life if our next album is going to be harder or softer, or it's going to be more aggressive, you know, or it's going to be, should it be slower. But the biggest problem, and I don't think it is only for Sabaton, it's for the songwriters of any band or any musician, to stay true to your identity and at the same time evolve musically, because everybody's different. You know, I've heard, you know, when people talking about this album, some people say, wow, this is really different. Some people say, it's the same, I don't hear any difference at all. And some people think, oh, I want my band I like to go to new frontiers and challenge me as a listener all the time. Other people think, no, I listen to this band because I like that and that's what I want. So this is a war, if you will, that you cannot win as a songwriter. You will lose, you know. So it's we actually stopped. I mean, yeah, I agree to the fact that sometimes I have scrapped songs because, no, this is too predictable and it reminds me too much about that song that we did before. If it's only one line or a second, no. Oh. Then it can be cool that it's there, because maybe that type of melody can be a trademark of Sabaton or me as a songwriter. That's cool. But if I feel that a whole song, oh no, this reminds me totally of, you know, what we did 10 years ago, then no, of course it goes.
Okay. So you mentioned, each song is talking about the different battle or different hero. If you think about it, most of these stories, the first element could have a happy with happy ending, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
The Lost Battalion could some of them could be saved and so on. But if you continue to the story, you would see that, for example, the Lost Battalion, the end of the story is pretty bad. For example, Charles White Whittlesey, which was the commander, committed suicide.
Yeah.
Dragutin Gavrilovich, so he could resist, but he was kind of killed when he came back in 45. So that's maybe it's two flip of the same coin. But how do you see that comes? So there's kind of a heroism, but at the end, for what?
It's different on every song, but I agree. Sometimes that is there is another fact. The thing is, we have 3.5 to 5.5 minutes talk about a subject, we can only scratch the surface. We can paint a picture. We can paint, even if our best song is going to be still a small picture. I mean, Mona Lisa is a small picture as well, and it's a great picture. But we can never tell the full story because, I mean, it's heavy metal. To sing about the aftermath, what happens after, sure, but we can only record, yeah. You know, the instant. But I mean, we try to write our info in the booklet and write the lyrics in a way that people want to find out more. For example, on Heroes, we have the story of, you know, the incredible bravery of Witold Pilecki. And that's also one of those totally sad stories. Nobody believes him. He goes to Auschwitz on purpose. He finds in the Warsaw Uprising. And then, of course, since he's a prominent leader of the resistance, when the Russians came in, or Soviet Union, I should say, they execute him because he's a potential threat. In that case, though, being a very aggressive and sad song, it suits well. In other places, it's tricky. On Winged Hussars, on this album, I mean, the siege of Vienna didn't take place, and it wasn't only the Winged Hussars there. I mean, Sparta, it's for certain, you know, the 300 Spartans were not the only ones. Mm-hmm. There were other Greek nation states there, Thebans, you know, and everything. But if we try to explain everything at the same time, I think we tried that in a couple of occasions. And then it becomes boring again, you know.
Okay, but yeah, but even outside of the songs, yourself, when you're thinking about that, you're writing your story. All this story, even if the guy, if you take the story of these guys, most of them who came back after war, they were so damaged that you know it's lose or lose. I mean, yeah. or they die on the battlefield, or they come back, but they are so damaged yeah. that in fact they have no more life. Yeah. You don't have much story where the soldier came back home and he was happy in family, has two children for the rest of his life.
No, but that is the one of the things that the world leaders of today and the world leaders of the past, and I think the world leaders of the future, will have to face, because we're storytellers, so we can't really influence things, but I do really think that most nations are very bad at taking care of their soldiers after the war is over, you know?
Back home, bye-bye, you don't care anymore.
Yeah, I mean, maybe a few has come back and managed to get into a normal life, but I mean, imagine the disaster of coming home being so destroyed that you commit suicide. Your family leaves you because they don't recognize you. Or even, imagine having saved the fucking world from ultimate evil and coming back and find out that your wife has gotten tired of you and divorced you mm-hmm. while you were not there, and now there's another guy, you know, taking your child to school. And the only thing maybe that kept you alive when you were fighting was the thought of those two. So, it's one of the things I try not to think about too much, because I get sad and angry at the same time, and it's not a good combo.
Alright. Just out of curiosity, in general, how do you build the track order of the album? Why do you decide this? I think the first song is Sparta, and then the second one is this one, and the third is whatever.
It's different. I mean, when we do a concept album like Carolus Rex, time obviously spells, but then we try to get a good mix, so we don't have, I mean, the obvious one is don't have two slow songs that have the same type of tempo and the same type of beat next to each other. That's very obvious. I mean, I think it goes without saying, but when it comes to track lists today, they mean less and less, because most people will not listen to the album in its entirety. They will go to the song they like. But I still think we try as hard as possible, because I know I like to listen to an album entirely from between 5 and 10 times because sometimes it's a song you don't like on the first listen that turns out to be your favorite song of that album. And so I try and give every album at least 5 or 10 listens before I start taking away songs, you know?
All right.
And I think there are still people who are like me, and I want to be interested, you know, oh, that I didn't expect, or, you know, go from a roller coaster ride, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So we try and get it okay. Nice from that point of view.
For the third time, you worked with Peter Salai.
Yeah.
For the cover picture. How do you work with him? You give him a rough sketch of what you want, so he just the idea, and then you work, and then you modify. How does it work?
It would be usually starting out with me and Per discussing what we want out of the picture, and then maybe we explained in this case to Peter that think of it as a last stand. Few soldiers are surrounded by many, and at least one should be close up. And then we don't have to see the outside soldiers really. We should just get the impression that, you know, it's a desperate situation and these guys are fighting outwards towards something, you know. And maybe Per did us quick, you know, and not a beautiful, but, you know, some kind of sketch, you know, yes, the guy.
The central figure, and then you put the other around.
Yeah, yes, something like this. So maybe we come up with the idea and the directions, but I can honestly say that Peter's work is Peter's work, neither. We have nothing to do with it. Because when he sent us that cover, we thought, wow, this is great. And the only thing we asked was, cool, instead of having only these modern soldiers, can we represent the album by exchanging these, you know, the sniper down here, can we have a Spartan warrior instead and have a samurai?
Samurai, yeah.
So you can, the album, the cover represents the music, but not, we don't want to give away everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, yes, to keep the interest there.
Well, you have also, like, for Heroes, the two cover pictures for the limited edition and the crystal edition?
I think there's going to be different ones, but I'm not actually totally sure on that, because we've been on promo tours, and I've been taking care of the different audio stuff that's happening, you know, listening through the bonus tracks, and Pat has been taking care of the visual stuff.
Okay.
So I know for sure that the graphics, because I saw some of it, but the regular stuff you have here, the graphics you go through, if you have the earbook, it's totally different.
Yeah, you have
it's made from scratch.
It's Alta, it's Faudigo, and so on, but it's very different. All right, so we'll see.
The booklet will be totally different. I don't know. Cover, I can't remember.
All right. We just finished our interview with a few questions.
Sure.
About you, I would say. What's your least favorite Sabaton song?
I don't know, maybe Speeder?
All right. The song you would have loved to compose?
Heavy metal or any music?
Any music.
Beethoven's Ninth.
Right, good. Good choice. For the next album, you have the choice of guests, dead or alive. Who would it be?
All dead, almost. Freddie Mercury.
All right. You have the opportunity, maybe it's done, but you have the opportunity to give a show anywhere in the world. Where would you go?
I would go back in time to 2014. We wanted to, but we couldn't. 2014, Normandy Beach. On the 6th of June. I would love to be in there. 70th anniversary of the D-Day on the beach to play exactly where they landed.
You could do something for the century anniversary of the end of First World War, in 2018.
Yes, there's a hope for that. I mean, we do have songs about that, but for me, Prima Victoria symbolizes so much. Not only do I think it's, you know, the beginning of the victory, it represents the turning tide of the war, it represents freedom, it represents the start of Sabaton. That's the first time we had this church style triple harmony vocal. That's the first time it turned out even better than I could have dreamt to do something in the studio. So both the story and the song itself is pretty emotional to me, and that is still a dream show to do. We couldn't do it then, we weren't big enough to actually pull it through. One day though, I will not rest until I played on the stage on Normandy Beach, and we're gonna have fucking, you know, landing crafts taking fans there.
Good.
So if you don't wanna walk, we'll have landing crafts and take you and let you go ashore.
That'll be great. Thank you very much.